Okay, so this is really about MISIM and how we got started. Is that you know, when I first started doing research at the university, I was really intending on doing data mining research, you know, algorithms and so forth. But when we started getting all the data, it was so dirty and nothing was integrated. The names weren't proper and so forth. We figured we better start a company so that we can come up with much cleaner data that we can apply data mining to. So that's how the data warehousing came about, and the consulting services as well. But then when we started deploying these data warehouses, even in the most technically advanced minds, we found a tremendous amount of paper where even frontline supervisors would have to fill out, you know, 5 or 6, sometimes 8 pieces of paper in a day, and hand that off to a clerk, and they would hand enter all that information in. So we said, okay, well, this is kind of ridiculous. We need to get a scorecard meeting, which is, I'll talk about a little bit later, started, you know, before 8 a.m., and the only way to do that is by digitizing all those forms. So that was the first step. And then we noticed that they wanted to pull a lot of, you know, delays and other information from the plant and these other areas. So we started collecting data from the plant, so pulling data off of the SCADA systems. But then we thought, well, for years I was trying to get the large fleet management providers to produce a very light system, just on an iPad or an iPhone or something like that. And for years I was trying to get that done, didn't get it done. So I said, hey, we already have our mobile app, our tablets in the field, has GPS, touchscreen, Wi-Fi, 3G, Bluetooth, has everything that you would want out of a fleet management system, so we just created one. And finally, we're moving into the Internet of Things, initially for underground positioning, but for other things as well. And the whole idea behind mobile apps, as I'm sure some of you are addicted to, but there's a whole idea behind gamification of interfaces. I'll talk about all those things. But first, what is a data warehouse? Quite simply, it's all these different data sources that are brought into one perspective. So for example, as you've probably seen in different databases, a truck might be named T101, T101-, all these other names. It's the same truck. And so you'd have to go to 5 or 10 different different systems to pull out all the information about that one truck. Data warehousing brings everything in one spot where you can run the usual reports, you can analyze things through OLAP cubes in Excel. And the key thing here that I find is different is that the mobile apps can become a two-way street, and finally, you can apply lots of data mining. Now, I've done a lot of data mining algorithms over the years. I can say that you know, most of the time, minds are not quite ready to use these advanced algorithms, but the data is ready now. So I like telling real application stories because we always sort of apply these things. This is about a case study where we started back in 2012 at Emet Coal Mine in BC. And at this particular mine, we were trying to get a scorecard meeting up and running by 8. And they had 39 different types of forms filled out in this one operation. So hundreds of pieces of paper every day. And as you can see, there was a lot of detail in these pieces of paper. Look at all this tremendous information that the frontline supervisor would provide every day. And this box would be filled up every day, and then a clerk would grab all that information, and then there'd be a series of 3 clerks that would then enter that information partially into a database, and then their filing system was to put all of that into a bag, a see-through bag, so they could see the date and put that into a storage container out in the parking lot in case the Ministry of Mines came by and said, hey, I want to see all your forms. Because all the forms were different sizes and so forth. So you can imagine the complexity involved in how much lost data you would have, the data accuracy and so forth. So we said to forget that. We did an analysis on all those different forms, brought those 39 different forms down to 9 forms. Because a lot of them were just repeated information being entered by multiple people. So down to 9 forms, you know, things like inspections, audits. In Canada, you have to do environmental inspections 4 times a shift. And you might imagine, do those operators really drive out to the tailings dam 4 times a day? Do they really drive out to the fuel bay 4 times a day? You don't really know. But with a mobile app, there's a GPS on that tool, you know exactly when they went there, exactly at what time, what they saw. They can take a photo of it. So it's a lot richer. So we can do geotags and photos on all these apps. Now this is a 5023, obviously very helpful to have in digital form. And just to tell you another story here. So the mine manager, one day he comes, gets into the dry, he's, you know, he's a brand new mine manager, he is our partner, and he sees all the frontline supervisors sitting around these benches filling out paperwork furiously. And he asks the secretary, he says, what's going on? What are they doing? She says, it's the end of the month. They're doing their safe work observations. So they were supposed to do a certain number every month, and what do they all do? They all do them all at the end of the month, and really, there's no value in doing those safe work observations there because you're supposed to be observing the workers. So how do you really know that these cultural safety activities are not just pencil-whipping exercises? The only really way to know is to understand how they fill them out, where they are when they fill them out. So, you know, the most quantifiable impact of the you know, using these mobile apps was to take a look at the safe work observation. Now, not only did we require them to do more, but what this doesn't show is that they actually did them on time and when they were supposed to, and it resulted in a significant decrease in incident rate at this operation. So, yeah. Now, incidentally, another thing happened. We weren't quite expecting it. The frontline supervisors were kind of reluctant to be tracked continuously. They felt that Big Brother was going to be watching them. And now there were two generations. There was very young frontline supervisors and much more experienced frontline supervisors. The young ones took it up right away. They were actually frustrated by having to fill out paperwork every day. I'm sure as all you are, when you go to a doctor's office and you have to fill out the same form every single time, it's ridiculous. Well, the frontline supervisors were of the same opinion. Now, some of the more experienced ones, it wasn't until we started giving them production data, because this app was part of a larger data warehouse where we could pull from any system and provide that information in the field. And so they became very, very addicted to this two-way form of information. Not only do you provide information, but you also get that information back to you. So they could immediately do corrective actions. When something was going wrong, they could find out immediately, and they can drive out to that spot, have a conversation with the driller, have a conversation with the shovel operator immediately. And we saw a 17% jump in BCMs. We weren't planning on, you know, delivering production information in the field, but it ended up being something that was most requested. So, in conclusion of this particular case study, we saw that it was fairly easy to go from paper to mobile apps, even for some of the more experienced ones. But it's very, very easy for the young frontline supervisors. In fact, it was expected. And it actually made them happy. Another analogy I have is where some of the frontline supervisors, this particular mine, had very high turnover. And when we started handing out these frontline supervisors, mobile apps to the frontline supervisors, the tablets to them, they felt that they were more engaged with the company. They felt, oh, now I feel part of this company. And that was something else that we didn't expect. And we did an experiment. We said, okay, we're going to buy all these iPads, and we tested iPad minis and full-size iPads, and the minis won out. They preferred the size. It was just right. We put a case on them, an OtterBox case, and some groups, some people, it's a mix of ages, some of them we had them give it in at the end of the shift, and others they were allowed to take it home. Now, I can say not a single one was stolen and not a single one was broken. However, the tablets where people could bring them home were perfect, beautiful, clean, shiny, no scratches. Whereas the ones where they have to give it in at the end of the day, they were a little rough around the edges on the tablet. So we just said, hey, why don't we just give it to them to take it home? And so they started looking at production from home, getting prepared for their shift from home, and we had to put in a few other safeguards to make sure they didn't do it while driving. Another key thing that we noticed is that because they became so addicted to the data, they started requiring all these hotspots throughout the pit. And they were trying to get continuous coverage everywhere in the pit. Let me say, these mobile apps are designed to work in intermittent connectivity. Your phone going in and out of connectivity, completely fine. All your apps continue to function. We have to change our thinking. We don't need continuous connectivity. When you drive by a sync spot and all your data uploads, just like you do when you're driving your car, yes, when you drive through a spot, all of your emails and so forth download. Let's think differently. Some other learning, there were a lot of clerks that were repurposed. There were at least three clerks that were repurposed to analysis and other areas of the operation. So pretty much all the manual data entry was eliminated. Because the frontline supervisor put the data directly into the database. But a key thing that we also noticed, they spent a lot more time on problem solving, not paperwork. It really clears up their time, and your frontline supervisors are one of the key members for productivity and safety in your mine. Give them the tools. So we also noticed another thing. Addiction to data. People were continuously refreshing, looking at it continuously. And we also noticed that because we went from almost no visibility to what was going on in the pit, to complete visibility of everything that was going on in the pit, we would have the GM call up the frontline supervisor and say, hey, this shovel's been down for 5 minutes. What have you done about it? So we have to figure out a way, a different process, a different mechanism to keep people focused on what they are supposed to do. So those are some important learnings that we had to have, that we had to manage. And like I mentioned before, you can do smart forms. In other words, since we had the access to all the data already, we could pull from the fleet management system and so forth and make these smart forms. Which brings us to this other area that I wanted to talk about, linking mobile with a data cloud. Now, of course, this is an internal data warehouse, but this would work the same way in mobility. Now, why do we love Excel? What is one of the key reasons we continue to love Excel, even as a database tool? It's not meant to be a database tool, but we still use it as a database tool. Why? Because we always have like maybe two or three systems. We want to pull that data into a single system and then add another column, one little bit of data that's just missing. So that's why we use Excel. Well, with these mobile apps, it's very easy to link the data. And nowadays, there's a new data structure out there called NoSQL, structureless data, which allows us to very quickly and easily add data into a database. It's not even a database anymore. So this is just an example of looking at fleet management systems, the CMMS, so the maintenance system, and paper. So we replaced this particular system. So when they had it down, we would automatically generate a fleet management system alert. Okay, we would generate that alert. And this would be broadcast to everybody in the field. This was a live web page that anyone could go and edit. Later on, we restricted the access, but everybody could actually see it. You can put in comments. You can also give an expected uptime, which was hugely beneficial, because this was a field that didn't exist in the fleet management system, but it's very, very helpful for the dispatcher to know when to send someone back to that machine so that as soon as it comes up, you have an operator there. And finally, since we have access to all the maintenance data, we can link that work order to that particular down. Again, that's linking across all these different fields and providing that data in the field and that interactivity in the field. Same thing could be said about plant monitoring. We had these guys that were filling out three different books, one that stayed in the plant, one that was brought back to the site to be entered into the database and so forth. And this is at a small gold mine in Mexico. So they would have, for example, a delay, and they would have to record that. Now, we were able to detect directly from the SCADA system the start of the event and the end of the event. But there was one additional element of information that was needed by a human, and that was the delay code. Okay, so this is where we were bringing data from different locations and some manual data, so data fusion. And so another key aspect that we had to learn, it has to work both with the mouse and with a finger. You have to make sure the buttons are big enough and that it's very interactive, touch-based. So the lesson here was that mobile apps and a data cloud are ideal as a manual supplement of integrated data within a workflow. So all those examples that I gave you were actual workflows. In other words, processes. So now we're getting into the fleet management side. So this is some images from an aggregate plant in Arizona and a small coal mine in Wyoming. So we deployed it with the same hardware. One of the guys that's working for us is an ex-CAT guy, so he took all the hardware and so forth from MindStar. But we got a clip for the tablet, so that it's very easy to clip in and out. Why? Because you can do your walk around with the tablet. You can take pictures of some sort of leak or some sort of scratch or some sort of new damage and or whatnot. And we had required that they wire in the power to make sure that the power remains there. So this is it in Arizona and in Wyoming. And notice that they chose to use these little cigarette lighter sort of power tools to power this thing. And in Arizona, it was completely fine. The guy took it home every day. But what the operators ended up starting to do was taking home these little cigarette lighters, cigarette chargers every day. So that was a lesson learned. You know, anything that can go, like a tablet, you know, has GPS on it. We know if someone takes it home. But these little, charger and so forth, hardwire that in. So some other aspects, so we do the usual fleet management, delay code and cycle times and so forth. Like I said, you can do a lot of like pre-op safety inspections, smart forms where you link back to drop-down lists and so forth. Supervision, giving you a really good perspective on what's happening in the mine. But this is the thing that I really wanted to talk about. Real-time personal performance. Feedback. Frequent, immediate feedback. And this is the style of mobile apps, of our personal social media interactions. This is what creates an addictive aspect of performance. So here, let's think mobility. So the current is connectivity is the key, but let's be realistic. Communications will never be perfect. Don't wait for perfect communications before you start using these types of tools. In fact, these are probably more robust in terms of intermittent connectivity than more modern tools, or other tools, I meant to say. So we also have this concept, the computer has to stay on the machine. It's a fleet management system. That's actually a fallacy. We should be able to move this computer around with the human, not just the machine. Okay, because the machine still currently can't operate without a human. So this way we track both the humans and the machines. Now, we have this idea of pre-op on paper. There's a lot more richer pre-ops that we can do. For example, more engaging FLHAs. That's a field level hazard assessment. That's a Canadian thing. So this is where I'll break and just talk about elements of gaming. I have to admit, I'm addicted to video games. And I'm sure some of you are here secretly as well. This is a screenshot of the most addictive game ever made. It's called Sid Meier's Civilization. It's a turn-based strategy game. It's also available on the iPad. Don't download it. So I was trying to figure out what makes this game so engaging and so compelling. And one of the key aspects of it is it frequent achievements and micro awards. In other words, it's giving you continuous feedback. Now let's think about it today. Are we giving supervisors continuous feedback when they're filling out a safety form on time, when the operator does something good in the mine? No. Now this is another billion-dollar game that's super simple, but the thing is that people play this on Facebook. Now what's with this game? Why is it so addicted? This game is naturally social. You play it with your friends. So there's a social affirmation, a social aspect to it. Now, I can tell you something else. My wife, she likes to take pictures of the kids, of course, puts them up on Facebook, and then all of a sudden, all these thumbs up comes in. And usually I'm tagged in the photo too, so I get this huge inflood of, this person commented on the photo and so forth. It's so easy for someone just to click that little thumbs up, but you know what? It makes my wife feel very good. So all these little badges, all these little awards through the interaction are addictive. We were talking last night about Snapchat. What do those different icons mean? What do those badges mean? You earn those badges through interaction with the app. So it's very easy to collect that data. Now, some of you might be using Fitbit. Now, why is this company, it's essentially a pedometer, why is this company worth $1 billion now? What is it that they did to a simple pedometer that makes it now worth $1 billion? They created an interaction, an interface that tracks your progress, that awards you badges if you achieve particular thresholds, and also has leaderboards and scoreboards. These are all gamification elements that make you addicted and wanting to use the app more. Why aren't we doing that with safety? Why aren't we doing that with productivity? And the last aspect is access ubiquity. The data from your Fitbit or anything, from Facebook, whatever, is accessible on all of your devices. Why is it that we would have to go to one particular reporting environment for all of our production numbers? Another maybe Excel spreadsheet for all our safety numbers? Data access ubiquity is also a key aspect to this gamification. Now, all these elements are, some of you have seen me give frequent speeches about these three P's. People, process, platform. People, because we're trying to understand what motivates people. Process, we can work it within a workflow, and platform. Let me give you an example, a little example of this gamification. Very simple scoreboard, or scorecard. Okay, so this scorecard, not this particular one, but this scorecard is made up of certain key elements. You have leading indicators down here. These are the KPIs that if you do them, the top ones will improve. Okay, the top ones are that we normally track in mining, number of accidents, number of tons. It's very difficult to manage and figure out how your performance is you're just tracking tons. What is it that you need to do to improve the tons? Things like have a really good shift startup. So, you know, what was your productivity or when was the time to first coal in the morning? Another key aspect, points. Now, because you want to engender a sense of competition among your managers, you want to normalize all those records. Points. Points is a way we have seen when people are walking into these scorecard meetings, they're teasing each other. Oh, well, how'd you do in your points? Ah, and they sort of, you know, bust each other's humps about it. And finally, how do we get, you know, when we first started deploying the scorecard process at this mine, it took 2 hours to go through in the morning. So this is ridiculous. They were addicted to it, but it took way too long. So how do we narrow this focus, narrow this conversation? That's this last column right over here, percent achieved last 30 days. What is it that we need to have a conversation about? So now we've been lucky enough to work with this mine for 10 years, and I'm going to show you, you know, some aspect of this gamification impact. So this is simply shift change is the y-axis. The x-axis is obviously quarters. And we want to show you that it's not just the Hawthorne effect, meaning if you start measuring them, they change the behavior, but eventually they go back to normal. So this is, they had a very large operation, so they had two huge fleets, one of a waste fleet, or they call it overburden, another one of coal or mineral for the hard rock miners. So as you can see, well, we started the scorecard meetings around this area right over here, and right from the outset, the coal manager had it on his scorecard. And the OB manager did not. And then we had a change of HR where both managers left. And whenever a new manager comes in, we have an interview with him and ask him what he wants on his scorecard. And that's what we put on there. And as you can see, the new manager did decide to put shift change on his scorecard. And you can see within two quarters, his performance went pretty close to the previous possible performance. And the co-manager thought it was stupid, so he took it off. And as you can see, it goes back up. Now, when coal hit the skids around 2012, we did an analysis of, you know, which leading success indicators were most effective, and we saw that shift change did, and you can see within one quarter of putting it back onto the scorecard, we had regained our performance. So, big changes in shift change, just through subtle competition, a scorecard, and so forth. So scorecards are a very good motivational process within that. So again, it's people, process, platform. Now, in terms of gamification, it's sort of a built-in people, process, platform. It's all right there. We have frequent feedback and interaction. We have social aspects. How do we have social aspects? Our minds are naturally social because we have crews and they behave as teams. Even within that, you have teams within teams. And so it's much more effective and it keeps very, very high engagement of the workforce. So what's next? What's coming next? The first thing I can say is the Internet of Things is very, very good for mobile apps. Why? Because almost all the tiny little sensors that are coming out as part of the Internet of Things have an API that work directly with mobile apps. Okay, so a large amount of the research and development that's going into it is specifically designed to interact with a mobile phone. It's much easier to have a mobile phone as your reader of these sensors than have custom hardware as readers. So it's essentially low-cost tracking. This particular beacon right over here, this costs $5 retail. It costs $2 to manufacture. And it has a range of 30 to 50 meters and can track someone underground or inside of a building. Now, another key thing is APIs. That's application programming interfaces. Now, there's a lot of really cool tech coming out. We saw, you know, a very good presentation about radar detection and so forth, positioning. There are a lot of little sensors that are coming out. Why do we need a separate computer and separate screen for every single one of those applications? I'm sure some of you have seen these shovel cabs with like six screens in there. That's too much. Because maybe they only need to look at it maybe once every 5 minutes or so. APIs nowadays, almost every mobile app, allows you to subscribe to data streams. So you don't need a separate computer. You don't need a separate screen. Modern apps just provide that data. So almost an interaction between different pieces of software. The cloud also allows you to be very scalable. Which is very useful because a lot of this data, IoT data, is there's a lot of data signals, but it can be processed down to very small bits of information. And you need something called big data analytics to do that. And I'm not going to get into that. That's a whole other speech. But essentially the thing is that the solutions nowadays should be one-tenth the cost of what they were previously. So in conclusions, mobile, I see it as both tracking and information. So it's both providing information but also consuming information and engagement. You can be much more engaged in your mind and so forth with your team through these mobile apps, through gamification design. Now let's face it, there's tracking and information ubiquity in our personal lives. I'm sure we all have, you know, Dropbox or, you know, OneDrive on our phones. We have all of our files that we would ever want. Gone are the days where, you know, our hard drive fails and we lose all our data. It should all be in the cloud. So why don't we have that in our minds? If it's in our personal lives, why not in our minds? So we have a vast amount of paper, very low use of our data, and I'll tell you, there is slow entry for mobile alternatives to legacy systems. It's a hard concept for people to get across. Oh, you mean I don't get a big giant computer and a big huge touchscreen in my cab? No, you get this little iPad that you carry around with you. It's a different concept. It's very difficult to change people's minds. But it's part of the data-rich future world. So what we need, educational and cultural readiness for analytics. As a professor, I'm not allowed to teach about databases. Sure, some of you are mining engineers, or most of you. We took 3 rock mechanics classes, probably, all of us. And yet when we went out into industry, especially in these modern days, we spent half of our day collecting data, massaging data, reporting data, but we didn't get a single database class. We're going to see more mobile and Internet of Things, and we're part of the data-rich world, and the next generation of employees will expect this. So with that, I'll take any questions if there's still time. Nothing? Okay, one over there.
Do you have any applications working on any site about the mill shipyard section?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Do you have any applications working on any site for the shipyard, for the mill? Like, can you grab any data from mill or shipyard?
Yeah, so we pull from SCADA, DCS, or as well as historians. So if that's what you mean by the process plant, yes. Our market is, we also put Pi in the cloud, you know, like the historian called Pi in the sky sort of thing, you know. But it's much easier to deploy it through the cloud than it would be by having all these pieces of hardware that, you know, you're probably familiar with that can cause some problems. In terms of the tracking, the intent was to also use those nearables in a plant. Because the plant folks at a local copper mine south of us, they want to be able to track some guys where they are in the plant. And it's very context. Right now, those little trackers are used in the mall. You're walking around the mall, you see a shoe display, and up pops a coupon. imagine you're walking around in the plant and you walk past, you know, a bearing that is not, we're doing so good, and up pops an alert, you know, why don't you check out this bearing? So, you know, spatial context is the future of these mobile apps and nearables. So, yeah.
Right. Sean,
go ahead, Frank.
What is the deterrence from the mining companies to put everything on in cloud? What have you, in your experience, seen or heard from them as why they're not putting their data out there?
Because CIOs like to justify their jobs. No, I'm just kidding. So some people think that they can handle security better than Amazon. And I'm sorry to say, I think Amazon would do a better job at data security. One key thing, though, in working with mines in like BC and even in Wyoming, we saw like a 1 MB connection out. So, you know, we didn't have enough bandwidth to get out there. But the quarries that we've been working with now, we didn't ask for permission. They just said, okay, just put it on the cloud. It's better to ask forgiveness than permission. And so they're pulling that data into their systems from the cloud. So again, the CIOs are probably thinking, oh, data security, it's not as secure. But in my opinion, having seen both sides, it's probably more secure in the cloud.
I mean, do you see any issue with security and privacy? Because if you're putting your confidential data out there and it gets hacked, that's not probably good.
But, I mean, you can hack any system, and so as long as you have the same, security protocols, you know, most of those hacks happen by someone opening an email that has something connected to it. I mean, that's the thing that where most of those hacks have been happening. So, I think it's, in my opinion, and the iPad too has mil-spec encryption. Like it's military specifications for the encryption, so it's pretty powerful. A lot more than a Windows machine, a Windows tablet.
Yeah, hi. You touched on the need to keep all the paperwork for a mines and department inspection visit as a legal requirement. We work in Peru where we have everything's got to be stamped, signed, sealed, and kept for 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing a change in the acceptance of electronic documents?
So we haven't tickled the dragon's tail in the States. So what's happening now is they can just print it off. But they do sign it on the mobile app and so forth. In Canada, the Ministry of Mines was fine with it. We also, another key benefit of putting it out in the cloud is it can't be modified. Once we put it past a certain location. And you can track if someone does modify. We track every single version of it for that particular purpose. But in the States, what we've been seeing on the mining side, the quarry is different, but in the mining side, they actually print it out after they fill it out. But, you know, it doesn't take time to do that. You know, you just press a button, pow, it comes out. And they don't use it there either. It's not like they go through the paper, you know, and it's like for the MSHA guys. And one other thing I do need to mention, originally we had like the form that looked cool, you know, that had a lot of, you know, more engaging buttons and so forth. What we needed to do is make it look like a 5023, you know, with all the title and put those positions in there. So it helps the regulator sort of feel more comfortable when it looks like the form he's used to.
Thank you. Great presentation. Thank you.